Thank you for tuning in to another episode of I1 Practice Podcast. This is a pre-recorded episode that was recorded back in June with Toby Korn, and we do plan to have Toby back on the podcast later this fall before and potentially after the Jeddah Marina Classic. I hope you enjoy.
All right, we have a special guest today. We have the Jeddah Marina sales manager and five-time BFL winner, Toby Korn. Toby, how are you today?
I'm pretty good, man. I'm inside in the air conditioning. I'm not out in that heat.
Yeah, it's nice and cold in here.
I like that.
It was freezing cold the last 15, 20 minutes. It got really cold in here.
Not freezing cold outside.
It is not. I'm glad you're here. First of all, I'm glad that we can get you in here. Finally, we've been talking about it for a few weeks.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So can you explain to us like exactly what goes on in your world and how it's different from ours? As far as what you do at Jeddah?
Oh man. Yeah, no, I've been at Jeddah now for right at 10 years and, you know, Kerry and Donna Clark, they own Jeddah Marine and they've owned it for going on 30 years now. And, you know, I come from my background. I worked in a tire factory. I worked for Continental General Tire, and I hated to go to work every day. Now I don't hate to go to work most days. So I have to deal with the public, which can be challenging, but man, I like it. So no, normal day at Jeddah Marina is, you know, our guys in our parts and service department, there's never a dull moment over there. Them guys, man, they're, you know, right now we're running about 3 weeks out just on basic, you know, service checks. So for me, you know, I order all our boats. We sell all White River brands. We sell on the fiberglass side. We sell Ranger, Nitro, Triton. And then on the aluminum side, we sell Rangers and Trackers. And then we sell the pontoons, Sun Trackers and Regencies. And then also we sell the Tahoe sport boats.
Gotcha. So yeah, that was back in January that we were there working on Ryan's boat. And what, we were there for just a few hours, I guess. And I was basically right beside those guys. They're an entertaining bunch.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We've got five bays. Everybody's got their bay, basically a bay and a half for everybody. And man, they're, like I said, they do it all. You know,
the amount of, did you bring my tool back to me or did you put it back where you got it or whatever, man? There's,
oh yeah. Yeah. They're pretty serious about that stuff.
All sorts of
it. I stay away from all the tools.
So this year alone, so I can imagine, can you explain to us like how boat sales are going this year versus the last previous years? Can you talk about how like COVID impacted that versus now?
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, there around 2000, in the spring of 2000, when COVID hit, me and Kerry was like, what are we going to do? You know, we were looking at each other, have to shut the doors, can't let anybody in, nobody can look at boats. And we had about two, maybe 3 weeks there. And then it was, the floodgates opened. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to be on the water. And it didn't matter what you had, it was gone.
Really?
Yeah. And then, so that being said, it happened all across the country and manufacturers couldn't keep up. So we had about a year and a half, 2 year period there where it was hard to get inventory of all sizes.
Obviously now, you sell new and used boats and you saw that both on the new and used.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, if there was people that were pulling boats out of the fence row, putting it on Facebook for 2,500 and somebody'd come hook onto it and go. Bring it to Jeddah Marina and get it running.
So it didn't matter. If there was a boat in stock, it was gone.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Many times a trade-in boat, a used boat, man, me and Kerry would kind of bet on it. You know, we'd have it sold before the end of the day a lot of times.
So how is that now? Are you still kind of seeing that? I mean, COVID's basically died down now.
Yeah, that's over. There's no way to sugarcoat it. It's over.
So how different is it now going back to just, I hate to say regular boat sales, but seeing that impact of now going from, there were a bunch of people with, you know, the wish to be on the water.
Yeah. We, you know, not getting political, but I mean, there was a lot of free money out there and, you know, people were a lot looser with their spending. And now, you know, our interest rates have creeped up, which we have no control over that. But yeah, no, there's still people buying boats. you know, that's one of the good things with the brands we sell, you know, they're still buying.
Mm-hmm. So along with boats, you guys obviously rig up these boats, you fix them, service them, everything else. On the electronic side, what is it that people are mainly looking for that you guys see?
Daily, multiple calls daily about forward facing.
You know, I can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, you guys know that. We see it. You know, you're coming, you know, my background fishing wise is from Southern Illinois, where you don't use a depth finder. Mm-hmm. You use your rod to tell you how deep you are. And it's just, it's amazing. You know, coming down here, and I remember the whole down scan, side scan craze that started here on the TVA on Kentucky Lake. Mm-hmm. And all the units that, you know, I hear about how, you know, back around 2010, 2011, all the down scan, side scan units they sold. Well, now that's the last couple of years. That's why it's been with forward facing, whether it be, you know, active target or live scope.
Are you seeing much of a difference? You know, more people wanting the live scope versus active target, or is it split? Or
it's split, man. It's Ford and Chevrolet. It's kind of like boats, man. Everybody makes a good boat. You sure. know, that's what I, that's how I start every conversation with a customer, man. Everybody makes a good boat. And that's the way I feel about the electronics. You know, whether it's a Garmin, Lowrance, Hummingbird, forward-facing transducer, it's going to do what it's supposed to do. You just have to learn how to use it mm-hmm. to benefit you.
I mean, Ryan, just from the sales standpoint, how many times do you guys talk about, like, the active target and, you know, all that other stuff in a, just in a day?
Every phone call.
I mean, yeah, it's
every phone call, because I mean, obviously we're setting up mounts for those electronics, and it's constantly, whether they've got Hummingbird, Garmin, Lowrance, whatever, it's the
we're
question.
All three.
Yes. We're all three. the question is always, well, where do I want my forward facing sonar unit? Like, do I want it on top or on bottom? You know, and obviously that just comes down to personal preference, but those are the kind of questions that we're getting on a daily basis. And, you know, we're seeing Garmin's, Lowrance's, Hummingbird's, all of it. You know, and it's pretty crazy to just see over the last few years what it's really evolved into. Everybody's got live scope now or forward facing sonar.
Right. You know? So, we can get into a little bit of a controversy. What's your take on live sonar and active target? Oh,
man, I'm that.
I didn't tell him to ask that.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. You don't have to give an opinion.
I mean, I'm kind of a grumpy old man. You know, I'm good with it. I'm good with using it. I'm good with taking it away. At a professional level. Yeah. We got to put some limitations on it. We really do. Think you're going to see that in the next few months coming. So
you think so?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It's all said and done pretty much. There will be limitations for sure next year.
I mean, I tell you, it'll make our life easier, man. It's just like, you know, if we put two active target transducers on, here's a prime example. When I left, they're putting two active target transducers on a trolling motor shaft. And I never thought about it, but you've got to change the ping, the way that transducer shoots out. If you leave it wired, you know, like it comes from the factory, they interfere.
Yep.
So
gotcha. So going back to tournament results and the limitations that are coming, is that just on the MLF side or is that both sides?
No, I'd say that's going to be across the board.
That's everything.
Yeah. I think, you know, Bass is the one that's, I think, taking it to the next level right now, mm-hmm. as far as getting angler feedback and everything. But I think it'll be across the board from a professional standpoint.
Right.
And that's how all that always works. I mean, like when the A-Rig first came out, you know, I think Bass took the stance on it first. But when one does something, the other follows.
And I still think, I mean, and, you know, until they just totally say, okay, this tournament, you can't use it, there's been rumors about that. There'll be certain half the schedule you can use it, half the schedule you can't. Mm-hmm. But man, you turn Drew Gill loose with just one transducer and he's still going to catch him, man.
Well, up until just recently, that's all he's ran is just one transducer.
That's right.
You know, and everybody's got six transducers and Drew's out there one one transducer in forward mode and catching just as many, if not more.
First year on the tour, and he's like top four, top three for Angler of the Year. And
he's got a chance to win Angler of the Year in the Invitationals and the Bass Pro Tour.
Yeah, that's something, you know, we all hear the negatives of Bass, all the rumblings of Bass, MLF. But man, MLF's got probably two of the best forward-facing sonar guys out there. Across the board with Jake Lawrence, Andrew Gill.
Yeah, I'm excited. Jake Lawrence more than likely going to the tour next year, which I'm looking forward to seeing. I think he's sitting in first or second in the Invitationals.
He's leading Angler of the Year now after Champlain. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited about that.
They've both done things the right way. Mm-hmm. There's no controversy with those guys.
Right. So speaking on tournaments, is both of the qualifiers for the Jetta tournament.
Yeah. They're over. They're done. Yeah. That's fairly new. You know, Carrie and Ron Lappin started the Jetta Marina tournament. Gosh, I forgot, close to 30 years ago. And it was kind of like the opening day of deer season, man. Jetta tournament was always the Saturday before Easter. And, you know, man, there's been as many as 500 boats in that tournament, you know. And honestly, Mike McDonald with Ranger Boats was the first person to kind of put the bug in me and Carrie's ear and Ron's ear about, hey, why don't you guys do a series? Why don't you, you know, try and bring some more? And we always like, no, we don't want to take away from the tradition of just the one tournament. And, you know, we lost all our tournaments when the fishing went downhill. And I told Carrie, I said, man, let's do it. Let's do two qualifying tournaments and a championship. And with my tournament background, I said, man, I don't want to do a championship if it doesn't, you know, draw some attention. We want to pay something, you know, open some eyes. And so it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, I guess, when we had our first series. You know, we had two qualifying tournaments. And, you know, it was still new to us. And we gave away two Tracker ATVs for the winners, and that was pretty cool, you know. And
who won that tournament?
Scotty Young and his partner. Yeah, we were fortunate enough to win that year, and man, it was cool and everything. But you know, it's face it, we won a four wheeler. You know, if you win a four wheeler, you win a boat, whatever. You know, it's awesome, but the guy that got second place goes to the bank on Monday morning and puts his money in the bank. Whereas the guy that wins the four wheeler or the boat or whatever, he may not get paid for a few months. So
we
decided, hey, let's do a monetary first place. And that's where we came up with the 20,000. And that's awesome.
I think that's a pretty good incentive, especially for, I hate to call it a local tournament because you guys do have a really, really good turnout every year. But I mean, $20,000, that's a heck of a prize.
It's a 1 in 70 shot at $20,000. Where else are you going to get that in the fishing industry?
Yeah, man. Right.
Like, that just doesn't happen, really.
Yeah, I fished, gosh, man, I don't know how many years I've been fishing tournaments. And, you know, I've fished a lot of local, so to say, you know, circuits that give away a boat or whatever. But I don't ever remember fishing for $20,000.
No. And I mean, it's crazy. You know, obviously Kentucky Lake, we've got a bunch of local tournaments. We've got every weekend there's a handful of them. But you know, to pay that out and for it to be a team tournament, $150 entry, $20,000. And I mean, let's not just discredit the fact that it's a $5,000.
Yeah, right. For the qualifiers,
you know,
and the contingency money that we've got there, you know, exactly. We've got just about every boat brand, you know, doing contingency money. I mean, I forgot what it was when you win one, it pays for a couple of years, not just 1 year.
Yeah.
In the first qualifier this year, you guys had a 5-fish limit. And the second one, you guys had a 3-fish limit. We had previously discussed it, I think, last episode or maybe the episode before that.
I think your first episode.
What was the mentality in changing that?
Man, we're very fortunate. I'm going to go on a limb and say we've got the best tournament director in the country in Ron Lappin. And Ron come in after there was a couple local tournaments the first weekend it got hot and he just said, I mean, I don't think we have a choice. We got to go to a 3-fish limit. And, you know, me and Kerry was like, yeah, we agree. Whatever you say, we're behind you. And it went over good. Everybody was happy.
Did you see any sort of, I hate to say negative impact, but did you see any sort of controversy as far as like anglers saying that it messed up their game plan at all?
No, nothing. This year we hit it. I don't know how we did it, but we hit the two probably best weekends of the year.
Yeah.
And,
especially the second one. Yeah, like, that was perfect storm.
Yeah. That's something. And what the crazy thing was, man, that was like a homecoming, man. That was the first time people got to catch one on a big crankbait, got to catch one on a spoon, on a hair jig in what? Close to 10 years.
Yeah. Been a while.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was like, you know, it opened some eyes. That's for sure.
So I'm still trying to get accustomed to fishing, still trying to learn all the basics and stuff like that. So can you explain to me from your perspective of being a professional angler and also someone who puts on these tournaments as well, what is the main difference between the qualifiers that happen in, you know, the middle to late spring versus the classic, which is in October?
Oh, okay. Yeah, man, that's just different styles of fishing. That's the thing that's really cool about a series or a circuit. You know, our first tournament in March, it's a number one, the lake's a lot lower. The lake's what, 356, 55. So therefore, you know, that current plays a big factor in that tournament as far as bank related current. You know, a lot of fish get caught on, I'd say most of the fish in that tournament got caught in less than 5 foot of water. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas the second tournament, which was the middle of May, most springs, middle of May, you would still have a lot of fish up shallow in the spawning cycle. Whereas this year we had Mother Nature throw us a curve and it got 90 degrees for about a week. And
the water level was up.
Yeah. We hadn't seen that. Actually, I've lived here now for 5 years and I had not seen the water over 360 for more than a day or two.
Even before it came up, it was at like 357, 358 for a month, even before it was supposed to start coming up. So there was a lot of fish that got up there earlier than normal, I think.
Yeah. And like I said, it was so much warmer. I think our spawn this year was, I think it was ahead, but
sure. I agree with that.
Are there any changes that are going to happen next year to the tournament that people can look forward to, or is it going to follow kind of the same format?
No, we're going to keep it. We're going to keep it with a two qualifying tournaments, and then a championship in the fall.
Mm-hmm. So how much, kind of not really derailing, but how much did Ryan pay you to give him the lucky draw?
Man, the girls at the store have done the random draw every year and it's amazing. You know, Carol will pull one out and she'll just hold it up. And I'll be like, man, are you guys messing with me? You really didn't draw him, did you? You know? And yeah, it is. That's pretty cool. That's one of the part that the day after the jet is pretty fun.
Yeah.
When I, you know, get to see who they draw.
The day before, Ryan was like, you know, you just got to get lucky once. You just got to get lucky. And sure enough.
Yeah, and that's the thing about the Jetta Marina term. I mean, you know, I kind of, like I said, I'm a pretty serious tournament angler. And I, you know, I always like, man, I'd like to have a 2-day championship because anybody can get lucky one day. But that's the part about it, man. Anybody can get lucky one day and win 20,000. Come on.
You just have to have one good day of fishing. That's all. Just one good day.
Yeah. So, Ryan, I want to ask you then the same question, essentially. So what you're doing, what you did for the qualifiers, how are you going to change that in October? Is it too early to say that, or is it just like a...
No, I mean, I can give you a general answer there. I mean, like Toby said, I'm trying to think of what we even did in the first one. I know we were fishing shallow. But in the second one, you know, we fished a mix of shallow and deep. But in the classic, it's going to be an all shallow deal, you know, at least for me. And we were kind of discussing that this morning about, you were asking about just bait fish in general. Mm-hmm. And so that time of year, it's all about bait. So like wherever that bait goes is where the fish are going. And you know, that time of the year, a lot of them, they'll push that bait up real shallow. I mean, they'll be the shallowest that they'll get a lot of times is in the fall. I mean, you'd throw up there and you'd think, oh, well, if there's a bass up there, his back would be sticking out of the water. And then all of a sudden you catch one.
Right.
So it's going to be a shallow water deal, but I would say, if it's anything like the last couple of years, which everything's like, we're relearning the lake again. We knew it before, then everything started going downhill, had to relearn it. And now that it's coming back, it's not coming back to the exact same way that it was before. Mm-hmm. And so we're still relearning again a little bit. If it's anything like the last few years though, it'll just be hitting a whole bunch of spots for the way I fish. And trying to catch five by the end of the day.
So that kind of brings up what I wanted to talk about after that as well. So I know, Ryan, I know exactly how you feel about fishing on Kentucky Lake right now versus how it was 5-10 years ago. Toby, can you give us your thoughts on it?
Oh man. Yeah. You know, like I said, I come from Southern Illinois. That's not one of the most sought after destinies for people to come trophy bass fish.
You mean people don't come to Wren Lake?
No. So yeah, I grew up, I always tell people I probably won more money in tournaments where I didn't weigh in a limit than I've won with a limit. So, but yeah, you know, I actually moved down here 5 years ago when it was just about the lowest of the low, but it was still better than what I was used to. Right. So it was funny, you know, I mean, I'll be honest, back in the day, I never would come to Kentucky Lake during the ledge bite. I'd come down in the spring, I'd come down in the fall, but I couldn't compete with these guys in this ledge stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, no, there's no doubt in the last, it's almost like flipping a switch, wouldn't you say, Ryan? Yeah. The last year and a half to 2 years, it's just like, where'd they come from?
Yeah, well, and that's what really confused me about the second Jetta tournament was, you know, we've got a lot more fish, but even this spring we were saying, like, where's the 4+ pounders? Like, we still just don't have a good population of 4+ pound fish. And then in that second Jetta tournament, it was like the average was a 4-pound fish.
Yeah. I mean, it is, you know, I've told everybody this story. You know, 2 years ago, I fished the Toyota tournament in the middle of April when they kind of let the secret out about the smallmouth spawning out in the middle of the lake. And then this fast forward to this year in the Invitational, I took off out of the dam and I saw all the boats just out in the middle fishing nothing. And I thought, they're not going to catch him, you know. And boy, was I wrong. So, yeah, I mean, technology's helped a lot also.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, forward facing opened up that whole smallmouth spawn that no one knew about.
That's the thing. I don't have any facts or data on this or anything like this. This is just a theory. You know, we've been talking the last few years about there's more and more smallmouth in Kentucky Lake. And I have kind of raised the question of, have they always been there? We just couldn't target them near as efficiently as what we're doing with LiveScope now. Obviously, you know, our population has increased, but you know, it just seems like it's not like they just now started spawning out in the middle of the lake on all those flat stuff. Like, yeah, I mean, they had been spawning there before.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember as a kid, teenager, back, I think it was in the early to mid 90s, BASS came here and had an invitational. I think it was in March or 1st of April. It was when the suspending jerkbait first came out. And man, I'd never seen smallmouth like it. And I couldn't help it. I had to come down here. So I loaded up and I come down, had my jerk baits. Dude, I didn't catch a fish. It wasn't as easy as they made it look, you know? And so, yeah, I think that's the other thing, man. It's just because it's not as easy as it looks. Let's put it that way.
No.
I can attest to that. I'll go ahead and tell you, I disagree with all the fish being in the lake. I fished for the first time on the lake yesterday in a boat, Tuesday nighter, didn't catch a single thing. I don't think there's any fish in the lake.
That's right.
Hey, did anybody catch over 14 and a half pounds last night?
No, I don't think so.
Nope. Perfect. Good. I think me and my wife's got the record for the year.
The one and only Stephen Bargy won with 12 and a half pounds.
Man, he's pretty consistent.
He is.
Mm-hmm. I think there was, I don't want to talk too much on the Tuesday nighters, but I think there was two groups that had 12 and a half pounds yesterday.
So once again, basically a 4 pound average. I mean, that's crazy.
But, so we talked about the current state on Kentucky Lake. Can you talk about how it was almost 10 years ago versus now? I know we've kind of touched on that already, but what you would have thrown 10 years ago dealing with, and I hate to say this, but like all the Asian carp.
Oh yeah. Problem. Yeah. I can remember. I mean, I was a big fall guy. I used to like to fish down here a lot in the fall. I've been fortunate enough. I've won a BFL regional and won a couple other team circuit championships for boats. And I can remember when there was no carp. And then I remember seeing what I thought was bass busting shad, and they were carp. Like, hurry up, idle over there and throw my stuff out there. And I'm like, whoa, what are these things? You know? And there's no doubt the carp they definitely moved the fish.
Yeah. So I think kind of what Toby said, it moves the fish. I think the two can coexist. I don't think they're near as bad as what a lot of people make them out to be. I don't think they have near as much of a negative impact. But we have to learn how to fish with the Asian carp, and it's just changed things. I don't think they're not competing for anything. It's just, they maybe move around more.
Yeah. I always, coming from Southern Illinois, I grew up fishing the Ohio River on the Smithland Pool. Mm-hmm. And it was phenomenal fishing for many years. Mother Nature came, silted things in, and then the carp came. And we're talking about fishing in creeks no wider than this room. And you put all these carp in these little creeks, you have to change the way you go about it. I mean, you have to literally, it's almost like hunting. You would have to, because, you know, a bass is just like a deer. I mean, if he's sitting there by that log and all these carp and are sitting there and you spook them, that's danger, you know? So I had to change the way I fished at the river. You know, I had to be real sneaky. So
there was a video that I saw, and I do not remember the creator, so I apologize for that. But there was a video that I saw, a group of people that were part of like a creek cleanup program, just trying to get carp out of the creeks and stuff. And I think in a day they had like 4 or 5 barrels worth of carp that they had got out of the creek. Yeah. Which is,
I remember, I think crazy. It was 2014-15. They had the Toyota Championship at Paducah, and my wife went and practiced with me one day.
Mm-hmm.
And we got 4 carp in the boat, and she didn't want to go back after that.
So I want to talk about MLF this year had the Toyota Series and the Invitational here on Kentucky Lake. And when was the last time that they had that here? Because I know they didn't have it in 2023.
They had the Toyota Series here last year.
Well,
Invitational. She's talking about
the Invitational.
Probably the year Jason won.
Which would have been 2018, I believe.
Yeah. I think they had the Invitational was on Kentucky out of the dam, and the Toyota was out of the state park on Barkley, I believe, that year.
Yep. Yep. That's exactly right.
So I think with them, I don't know if it's just part of their scheduling to come back here or if it's a sign that the lake is in a good place. I would say it's in a good place.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a combination of things, man. I mean, obviously they don't want to, you know, it's a televised live event. I mean, they want people to catch fish.
Right.
So yeah, they're going to go to the best places in the country.
And we talked about that last episode where I felt like I was kind of spoiled with just watching these events, because anywhere else it's not as abundant. Like here you need 20, 25 pounds a day to win,
mm-hmm.
Almost 30 to win. So I just think the lake is in a really good place. I don't know if you have any thoughts.
I've, I've said this a million times, but I know I said it on probably our first episode. Like, Kentucky Lake is such a special lake in the fact of even when it was at its lowest of lows, it was still taking 20 pounds or almost 20 pounds to win tournaments. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, it dropped off quickly. You know, it wasn't 20, 19, 18. You know, it was 20, and then the second place may have 14 or 15, but it was still taking 20 pounds to win almost every tournament. There's not many lakes in this country that does that, especially when it's in a low cycle, you know? So we've got a really special resource right here in our backyard, and we're just, I mean, we're spoiled to have that. And Toby and I, both being from Illinois, we know how bad it can be because I grew up fishing a little mud hole in Northern Illinois that, I mean, like if you caught 12 pounds, like you were a big man on campus.
Yeah. And the other thing is the size. I mean, that's my biggest thing now, you know, leaving Southern Illinois. Like when I go up to Southern Illinois and fish a Wren Lake or Lake of Egypt or whatever, dude, in the first 15 minutes, I'm ready to pull my hair out because there's a boat right beside me just about. And being down here now, there'd be many tournaments where I'm not gonna say I don't see a boat, but I don't ever like meet a guy on the bank fishing or anything.
There's no contesting a spot.
Yeah.
Well, there can be.
Not as abundant. Yeah. Not as abundant.
Yeah.
This lake, not even talking about from a fish standpoint, but from just the lay of the land, Kentucky Lake and having Barkley is the best tournament fishery in the country, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because it's so vast. Not talking about fish, how many you catch, how big they are, anything like that. Just talking about the lay of the land. Kentucky and Barkley Lakes, best tournament facility anywhere.
Yeah, when you put your boat in, I mean, literally a tournament can be won between the dam and New Johnsonville or from the dam and Dover. Yeah. You know, you never know.
It's almost like talking about the controversy for a spot. Who was it in the Bass series that they got into a argument? It was like 2 weeks ago over a spot. Well,
there was the Jordan Lee deal at the Heavy Hitters down at Casino in Florida.
Yeah. Cause he hadn't flipped a frog once. And then, one.
But I mean, there's been some pretty good ones here on Kentucky Lake.
There's been a few historic.
Probably the best.
Yeah.
If it wasn't the best, it's like top two or three fishing disputes all time happened right here on Kentucky Lake. The Randy Haynes and Jason Lambert of 2018.
I may have to look that up.
It's on YouTube.
It's got a few views.
I can imagine. Yeah. I'll be looking that up directly afterwards. Well, Toby, that's all that I have for you. Ryan, do you have anything else?
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on here. Obviously, you know, Jetta Marina is a leader in boat sales, you know, and we appreciate the relationship that we have. And so we really appreciate you coming by and Carrie letting you come by.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know who's running the store up there if you're not there.
No, Carrie's there. Carrie's there now. Like I said, man, we appreciate everything y'all do. It's awesome having you guys right down the road. Like I said, I look forward to doing this for many years to come.
Absolutely.
Well, we thank you for coming by, Toby. Hopefully in the future, we'll have you on a little bit more. You know, maybe closer towards the classic, we'll have you back on. Maybe after
anytime, a recap. Man. I like talk fishing.
Right on.
Yeah. So that'd be a good one. Get everybody in here and like do some who's going to win? Who's your pick?
I like that. We need to do that. Absolutely.
Yeah, get everybody. Everybody here at Precision, everybody at Jetta.
We can do a pool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do a, yeah. See Big Al. See who Big Al's pulling for.
All right, guys, that is a wrap on another episode. Be sure to follow us on all of our socials, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok. Send us a DM if you want to hear a specific topic or even a guest. Give us some feedback. Once again, we appreciate you for listening.